Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Hey now, welcome to the Daily Jungle. 36 hours later, and we are still all about the Eagles, ripping the Lombardi and the Hood's decision to put Malcolm Butler on ice. Eagle fans showed up, one day closer to sober, and they did their best to make the show better. Kinda. Pretty much. Super Bowl champion Zach Ertz and Michael Kendricks joined the show to talk about life after the win, St. John's head coach and Hoops legend Chris Mullin back in the jungle, Gonzaga forward Jonathan Williams came in and he broke down their season and joined me on Team No Camping. All of that straight ahead. Alvy, roll it. Zach Ertz is my guest. Zach, it is great to have you on. How are you?
Hey, man, I'm doing really well. How you doing?
Zach, I'm great. Great to visit with you. Let me say this first. Zach Ertz, Super Bowl champion. Everybody who's ever put on a pair of pads dreams of winning a Super Bowl. When you actually do it, Zach, I have to know, how does it feel, and does it feel the way you thought it would?
It was definitely surreal, man. Like you said, as a five-year-old kid, you kind of watch that game growing up, and you never expect yourself to be there. And then when you're there, you're going through the week, you have all the extra things that kind of surround the game. So it kind of takes your focus off the game a little bit. But then when the game finally starts, you know, it just feels like a normal game. And people have said, oh, you caught the game-winning touchdown. How did it feel during the game? And I was like, man, I was just worried about the next play because that's kind of how you feel. That's kind of how you always reacted during the game. So I'm sure when we get to the parade on Thursday, it'll start to hit me more and more. But it's still an amazing feeling being a world champion.
Zach Ertz joining us on the show. RSA mentioned the game-winning touchdown. Why don't we go right there then? You get the go-ahead touchdown with just over 2 minutes left in the game. Can you take me through it? What's going through your head? And then what kind of emotion did you have when you scored?
Yeah, I mean, it was obviously a big play in the game. We were down one. It was third down from like the 10-yard line. And I just had a normal slant route. The guy was playing kind of inside leverage. I think they played cover zero against it, so they blitzed everyone. And that was a really good play call against that defense, and I was able to win inside, and Nick made a great throw. He played tremendous the entire game. And then when we score, we didn't even have like a big chance to celebrate because they had to review it for what seemed like an eternity over there when I thought it was clearly a touchdown. So I'm glad it stood. Obviously a surreal feeling scoring the game-winning touchdown.
Yeah, Zach, what about that? I mean, what are you thinking as they're reviewing that play? Did you think there was any way at all that they could actually reverse that?
No, I had no idea what they were looking at, honestly. I felt like I caught the ball at, like, the 5-yard line, took, like, 3 steps, dove into the end zone, and, like, clearly crossed the plane. And then when they were over there for, like, 30 seconds, I was like, oh, it's all right. They always have to do this after every touchdown, especially in the Super Bowl like this. When they were over there for like 2 minutes, I was like, man, what the heck are they looking at? And luckily the call stood, but I don't know how I would have reacted if they overturned it. I don't think the city of Philadelphia would have liked it too much if they overturned that.
You think? I think that would not have gone very well back home. Zach Ertz joining us. You know, he talked about what an amazing play call that was. In fact, I thought that Doug Peterson et al. Called an absolutely incredible game throughout. He was so confident in you guys, but never more so than at the end of the first half on that fourth down play and the now legendary Philly special. What was your reaction when the play came in and then when you watched Nick Foles watch that ball in and make that touchdown catch?
Oh, man, it was crazy. To have the courage to kind of go for that fourth and one from the 1-yard line to call that play, we were kind of like, okay, let's do it. So it was definitely kind of a really gutsy call by Doug, but he'd been doing that all season, putting us in positions to make plays, third and one, fourth and one, every time we were going to go for it. And then Trey, I mean, the guy played quarterback in college for 1 year, 2 years maybe, and then he makes that throw. And Nick, it seemed like the ball just floated there, went up from my vantage point, and Nick obviously caught the ball, and it was a huge play in the game.
Yeah, Zach, my thing is, it's one thing. I mean, 99% of the guys take the points. 99% of the coaches in that situation are going to kick the field goal. The 1% that go for it, you know, they're going to use your offensive line, a very good offensive line, and pound one of the backs. It's one thing to go for it, but entirely another to go for it and make that play call. You mentioned Nick, Zach, a couple of times. He had another monster game. I mean, I cannot begin to say how impressed I am with Nick Foles. Now, he handled himself in the playoffs. How would you describe what you've seen from him and how he held the pressure of all the big moments?
I mean, the guy is so even keeled, not only on the football field, but off the field. He never gets too high. He never gets too low. So the pressure mounting was never a worry from a team perspective on any one of us, because we just love to go out there and compete and have fun playing football. I think you can see each and every week we play that we have 53 guys that just love playing the game of football, and it doesn't matter if it's during OTAs or in the Super Bowl. Guys are just out there having fun. And Nick played tremendous, man. He was hurt all training camp, so the first four games that he kind of had were pretty much his preseason, and then the last two games were pretty much his first games of his regular season, how we looked at it. So the guy was playing out of his mind in the NFC Championship game, and he obviously carried it over into the Super Bowl.
Having a tremendous conversation with Zach Ertz. We'll do that for a few more moments. You know, Zach, there's how Nick Foles handled his situation, and then there's how Carson Wentz handled his situation. What kind of a presence has Carson been around the team throughout this entire thing?
Yeah, I mean, this whole season, our success in the postseason wouldn't have been possible without Carson. You know, at the beginning of the season, we didn't know how good we were going to be. We thought we had a good football team, but we didn't know how good it was going to be. But with Carson Wentz as your quarterback, every time you step on the field, you feel like you're going to win the football game. The guy just exudes confidence. So he pretty much laid the foundation of our football team. So when we had some injuries early in the year with some Hall of Fame type players and Jason Peters and Darren Sproles, no one was really swayed. It was always a next man up mentality. And it was never put more to the test than when Carson went down. Obviously, the season could have gone one of two ways. It could have been a disaster after that, or it could have been kind of a rallying point for our football team, for guys to step up. And obviously Nick came in and stepped up in a big way. Guys elevated their game around him, so it wasn't only on Nick Foles to lead the football team, kind of like it was with Carson at certain points in time. But this whole season wouldn't have been possible with Carson. Obviously, the human element. Carson wanted to be out there. You know, the guy is one of the most competitive people I've ever been around, and he wanted to be out there. But he handled it with class from the moment he got hurt. He was helping Nick each and every moment he could, whether it be on the field or off the field. The guy is a really, really intelligent football player. And he's going to be playing in that game sooner rather than later.
Zach Ertz, obviously a Stanford man. Zach, before I let you go, let me ask you this. I was in Minneapolis all week long. I saw the Eagle fans when they got to town, and you could see exactly what it meant to them, how badly they wanted this thing. The show that you're on right now is a nationally syndicated show, so I'm getting a lot of phone calls from Philadelphia Eagle fans. And again, you see how badly they want it. But man, you're right in the middle of it. That's your fifth season with the Eagles, so you know better than anybody how passionate this fan base is and how badly they wanted the Super Bowl. What's it mean to you to not only be a part of the team, but a major part of the team that brought the Lombardi Trophy to Philadelphia?
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, I was drafted here 5 years ago. We haven't always had the best football teams, but the fans have always been with us through the good times and the bad times. They're always going to be passionate. They live and breathe the Philadelphia Eagles. And as a player, it's something that you can never really take for granted, because there's no really other city like this in America. They truly love their sports, and they truly love their Eagles, most importantly. As a player being here, I fully embrace being in Philadelphia. It's pretty much our home now. Me and my wife live out here. We love it here. Something we'll never take for granted, and we're so excited to celebrate with them on Thursday.
I was going to say a final thought then. What about Thursday? Any idea what to expect at the Super Bowl parade on Thursday?
I have no idea. Honestly, no idea. I'm sure the Phillies parade was big when they won it, I think in 2008. So I imagine that times about 100. People were dying and thirsting for an Eagles Super Bowl win, and they finally got it.
They got that. Zach Ertz, Philadelphia Eagles tight end. He is a Super Bowl champion. He is a Pro Bowler. And joining us on the show, Zach, I can't say how much I appreciate that. That is such a good conversation. Thank you so much for doing that, Zach. Have an amazing week. Congrats. And really nice to have you on today.
Hey, thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
Clones, can you give me a minute so I can talk to you about stamps.com? Now, here's a New Year's resolution that you can actually keep. Add Stamps.com to your business and save a ton of time and money this year. Now, I'm going to be very honest with you. I don't need that resolution this year because I've already done it, and I wish I had done it sooner. Stamps.com has saved me so much time and so much money. You see, Stamps.com brings all the amazing services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your computer. Stamps.com is the better way to get postage. You simply use your computer to print U.S. postage for any letter or package, any class of mail, and you let the mailman pick it up. You don't leave your office. There's no more lugging mail to the post office. There is no more hassle. So Stamps.com saves you time and money. Almost everything you can do at the post office, you can do right from your desk. Stamps.com. Convenient, easy, reliable, efficient. And those are all the reasons why I use Stamps.com. And right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale. Are you ready for a happier new year? Then go to Stamps.com. Hit the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in jungle. That's Stamps.com. Enter jungle. Once again, to take advantage of this great offer, Stamps.com. Enter jungle. That's Stamps.com. And now it's back to our daily jungle. The first Hoover High alum to win a Super Bowl, Michael Kendricks, joins us right now. Michael, congrats, and really nice to have you back. How are you?
How you guys doing, man? I'm doing great.
You know, I'd ask you what I normally ask guys, like, has it sunk in yet? But let me ask you this instead. You tweeted a great photo from after the game where you're crouching down, you're surrounded by confetti, and the caption reads, "The feeling is overwhelming." I mean, is there any way to put into words the emotion that you felt in that very moment?
No, I was honestly just trying to soak it all in and really understand what just happened. And like I said in the caption, the feeling was overwhelming, and it was so overwhelming that I actually got so emotional that I got weak in the knees, and I just had to crouch and take a second, and you know, just say thank you, you know.
You know, so when you crouched and you doubled over, it was like the enormity of the whole thing just kind of hit you right in that moment. So now it's probably going to take even a much longer time to process it. But now that you're starting to get away from it, what's it mean to you to make history like that, and especially in that town for those fans?
You know, I think what it means for me is it's just an all-time high moment for myself. And I don't know if I'll ever get to this moment again as far as, you know, something that I experienced in my life, but it's going down in history. Our names are going to be etched in stone somewhere. I don't know where it is, but it's most likely going to be right next to that trophy, or, you know, people of the city, you know, they'll remember this moment forever. I mean, you know, it's like one of those deals where people are going to talk about this team forever, for years to come. You know what I mean? And that's not going anywhere, and I'm proud to be a part of it.
I think, given the enormity of the moment, I think that's like the best explanation I've heard. You're right. I mean, it's going to mean so many things to so many people, and it's going to be a generational thing, and it's always going to be there, and nobody can ever take that away from you. And the thing about your team, it seems like you guys play for each other. People always say that, but the chemistry on the team and the bond on that team seems so amazing. If I could get you to make it about you for 1 minute, it's been so many guys that have played this game, so many guys, amazing players, amazing athletes that never got to that point and experienced what you're experiencing right now,
yeah.
And nobody can take that from you. How does that feel?
That's the whole thing. Like, you hear stories, even guys in our locker room that have been to the playoffs but have not been back to the playoffs since the last time they were there. We're talking about, you know, 6, 8, 7 years, dude, where people, you just have to get to the playoffs first in order to even get to the point where that we reached. So, I mean, for us to do something that other players haven't done, I mean, there's greats out there that have not done this at all. And I mean, we have such selflessness on the team. I mean, we went through so much adversity that it just means that much more. And you're right, we do play for each other. It's a true team. And I mean, we epitomize what it means to be a team. From the top to the bottom. I mean, we those celebrations that you see on the field, those aren't planned celebrations, okay? when you see us doing the electric slide, that was just us in the moment feeling it out. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the chemistry and the bond that we all have with one another, where we can read each other's minds. I mean, I can take you through plays that I've had in this season where during the play is going on, I may be out leveraged and I look at a teammate in his eyes during the play and he knows, cover me and I'll take your guy instead. Like, and that's without communicating. That's the type of chemistry we've had on this squad, and it's been good to be a part of. And like I said, man, it was a recipe for a championship, dude.
Dude, I think that is profound. I think I'm having this conversation with you right now, and I'm kind of blown away by this. Like, I'm blown away by the conversation I had with your teammate, Zach Ertz, in hour number one. Now, to be fair, Michael, part of this is he's a Stanford man and you're a Cal man. These are really good schools. You're really bright guys. But, man, what I'm hearing is just passion, like serious, serious passion. The chemistry and the bonds, how did this develop? I mean, you can't manufacture that. Is that like a product of just you were fortunate to have the right guys in the right locker room, or did you guys build this thing somehow? Did you impose it?
I honestly think it's a concoction of things. I think it has to do with, first off, the people upstairs choosing the right people, right? And then on top of that, them having these people having the right types of attitude towards every day that we go to work. It starts with guys like Carson and Nick, and guys like Foles, guys like Jason Peters, guys like Sproles, Malcolm, I play Jordan Hicks. You know, I'm listing guys down the line that just come to work every day, you know what I mean, and make it fun. You know, myself, Nigel Bradham, Najee Good, guys coming back from the streets like Brayman. Go back and watch the film and see what he did on Super Bowl game. Knocked out three people, bro. You know what I'm saying? Like, guys like this, like these people that I'm speaking of, I will never forget because they made it fun for me to come to work every day. You know, and that's when good things happen. When I go to work and I'm excited about going to work and I'm looking forward to seeing the people's face. Like, just saying, just to go in there, eat breakfast with them. I can't wait to sit down and have breakfast with my boys and then get to work today. We got to win another one. You know what I mean? It's the feeling is great. And when you're doing it and when you know that you're as good as you are and for it to all come together, it's the ultimate feeling, man. And I'll never forget this moment.
Michael Kendricks joining us. I would imagine too that when the job, it's one thing to go to work with guys you love, guys you respect, guys maybe even consider brothers, but when the job is what you guys do and you pay that price and you're in the trenches and you're going to battle, I got to think the bonds are just so deep and so intense and they'll be lifelong. Michael, before you go, I could take this conversation any number of ways. We have a couple of minutes, but I got to ask, I know you did this for your team. I know you did it for the city of Philadelphia. Let's talk about where you started, Hoover High School. You're the first Hoover High School alum to win a Super Bowl. What's it going to be like to go back home to Fresno? What's the Fresno reaction going to be to a Super Bowl champion, one of their own?
You know, I hope that it's just – I don't want to be treated any different. Yeah, I'm one of them, I'm from the same cloth that they're from. I'm from Fresno, California. If you guys don't know where Fresno is, that's my point. Okay.
Right.
It's in the middle of California. It's an agricultural city. A lot of farmers and just a lot of good folk, you know, 9-to-5 type of people and blue collar and coming from a place like that and being where I'm at, I hope that I can inspire other people from that city and from that place to get out and to reach for the stars and to experience life and everything that it has to offer. You know, a lot of people can get complacent and just stay in one spot. And you can live happily there. You know, like I said, you can work a 9-to-5 and live comfortably and be cool. Or you can go out and try to change history. You know what I mean? So I hope that when I go back to Fresno, I epitomize that message. And but at the same time, I still want to be viewed the same. I'm still Michael Kendrick from Hoover High School. I'll stay humble. I'll stay committed, and I'm.
It's been more than 36 hours since the end of that Super Bowl, and we're still no closer to solving the biggest mystery of that game, the disappearance of Malcolm Butler. But then again, really, he didn't disappear, did he? He was there. He was on the sideline. He was really on the sideline, but the reasons that he was on the sideline are still really unclear. Now, Bill Belichick was asked yesterday about that decision, and his response was, and I quote, "I appreciate the question, but it'll be a much longer discussion. There are a lot of things that go into that. In the end, the final decision is what I said it was." End of quote. Hey, Bill, listen. If you're concerned about taking up everybody's time with some long answer, I don't think any Patriot fans would have any problem with that. They've got all offseason to think about that. So take a couple of minutes, if you don't mind, and let everybody know exactly what happened, because time is on our side. We've got all the time in the world. Don't worry about that. And as for this notion that the final decision is what that you said it was, what you previously said on Sunday night, you know, that whole part about, quote, "we put the players and game plan out there that we thought would be the best, like we always do," end quote. Remember that whole thing? Yeah, that didn't pass the smell test then, and it still doesn't right now. Fact of the matter is, Malcolm Butler played 98% of the defensive plays this year. You really thought you'd be better off without him on the field on Sunday? Sure you didn't. If you wanted the best players out there, then why did you leave Eric Rowe out there only to get abused by Alshon Jeffrey? Rowe's not one of your best players. He's not better than Butler. If you want to bench Butler, just don't say that you did it because you went with a better player, because you didn't, and you know you didn't. Ian Rappaport of NFL Media reported as much when he said, quote, "the benching was a perfect storm of issues," quote, "sickness, a rough week of practice, and a minor rule violation believed to be related to curfew," end quote. Let's go ahead and break that down for a minute. All right, so he was sick. He was sick and he physically couldn't go. All right, that makes sense. Except nobody's saying that. That's not what you said. And if it's about a rough week of practice, how rough a week of practice did that guy have when he played 98% of your defensive snaps, yet played 0% of your defensive snaps in the biggest game ever? How bad of a week of practice must that guy have had? I mean, did he tie his own shoes together? Was he falling on his face? I mean, that makes some sense, I guess. How about this whole notion of a minor rule violation believed to be related to curfew? This guy missed curfew, so he missed the Super Bowl? That might be the dumbest thing ever. A minor rule violation. You're not going to let a guy play in the Super Bowl over a minor rule violation. Didn't Aaron Hernandez used to play for the Patriots? I mean, college coaches benching a player for the first series is the dumbest punishment ever. But benching a star defensive player for the entire Super Bowl for missed curfew might officially now be the dumbest punishment ever. That is, if it really was a missed curfew. And we don't know that. But if it was, if that's what that was, that's like hitting a fly with a cruise missile. Look, I know that Belichick is a big rules guy and a do-your-job guy, and that an alleged curfew violation is breaking the rules and definitely not doing your job. Again, if that's what this is. And if Butler did that, he shouldn't have done that, and he should have known better. But are you really going to bench a guy for an entire game that's the biggest game of anybody's life over a rule violation? It's not a preseason game. It's not a September game against the Jets. It's the freaking Super Bowl. Look, I don't know what the reason is. I just know it's not what Belichick is saying it is. There's no way that Butler is sitting on the sideline because he didn't fit the game plan. And if he was, maybe when your secondary is getting torched, you change up that genius game plan. Maybe you sub in the guy who is good enough to cover Antonio Brown and see if maybe he can help out with Alshon Jeffrey. And as for the possibility that it's just stubborn hoodie being stubborn hoodie, I mean, even that doesn't make sense. You were looking to send a message. For who? For what? It's the last game of the season. The roster is going to change between now and the start of next season. If it's about showing how tough and badass you are, were you willing to bench a key contributor in the Super Bowl over a minor rule violation to show how tough you are? Well, congrats. Congrats. Then you just played yourself.
Congratulations. You played yourself.
If it really was that, I hope that drawing that line in the sand was worth it. Because if it really was that, then that might be the dumbest thing Belichick's ever done. And it may very well have cost him and Tommy and the team ring number 6. And we still are not any more clear on what the reason is. He's has his story and he's sticking to it, right? 1-800-636-8686. Let's see what else you are thinking. Let's go to Twitter really quickly. Mark B. in SD tweets, getting burglarized and losing the Super Bowl on the same day really blows. I said blows. Signed, Robbed Gronkowski. Robbed. Of course, guys get robbed the day of the Super Bowl. It's not like they're at home. You don't have to do a lot of legwork in casing Gronk's house, in setting that up, to know that he's not going to be there the day of the Super Bowl. I don't know. If I were a baller like that, and I had that kind of money, and I had whatever he has in the house, if I'm in the Super Bowl, I'm going to make damn sure I've got a good security system. Yeah, I could probably tell you about that a little bit later on. I've got lots of options for security if you listen to this program. At Dave H-Town tweets, was he robbed, or did he drink all the beer he thought they took? That's good. That's good. It's good, except I haven't brought up this notion that Gronk got robbed. Why are y'all going in on Gronk for getting robbed? Why is that a topic? In fact, that wasn't even going to be a topic today. But I do like that notion of, you know, wait a minute. Don't be accusing your roommate of drinking your beer when you may have drank it yourself. Sugar Slim tweets, hey, Patriots fans, at least we don't rob our sports heroes when they're at work. Signed, Philly fan. You had a lot of fun with that one, aren't you? I want to talk about Nick Foles for 1 minute. I don't want to get too far away from this. Because as much hype as this guy's getting for the way he played in the Super Bowl, it's still not nearly enough. 28-43, 373, 3 touchdowns and a receiving touchdown, and one of the all-time great Super Bowl performances. This guy goes toe-to-toe with Tom Brady, arguably the best to ever do it. Tom Brady played one of the best games a quarterback has ever played at any time, and Nick Foles stands in, trades with him, and beats him. Nick Foles took apart Bill Belichick's defense. Nick Foles led the Eagles to their first Super Bowl ever. Nick Foles just went on one of the all-time great NFL postseason runs after looking incredibly shaky when he first took over for Carson Wentz. And no, I didn't see this coming. But I need to acknowledge it because I saw what he did. This guy was amazing. You know, but the confetti had barely stopped falling before people were already talking about, yeah, well, what's going to happen now? What happens now to him in Philadelphia? What's his future going to be? But can we hold that thought for one moment? Because it wasn't that long ago, like it looked like Nick Foles would be out of the NFL altogether. It was not that long ago that he was a backup and was on the verge of retirement. He had had such a miserable experience in St. Louis back in 2015 that he was this close to walking away. At 26 years of age, think about that. He was so done with football, he nearly walked away from millions because he just wasn't feeling it. And then he went on that now famous camping trip with his brother, and he came back, and he was rejuvenated. And then he's back playing football in 2016, and now he's the Super Bowl MVP. I mean, the guy went from thinking that he may find another industry to getting a backup job, to getting another backup job, to throwing for nearly 400 yards and 3 touchdowns in the Super Bowl. Oh, and catching a TD in the Super Bowl in maybe the brassest play ever. Not quite the Kurt Warner story, because nothing will ever match the Kurt Warner story, but it's not that far off. The Nick Foles story is a hell of a read. Pro Bowler after 2013, nearly out of the game after 2015, and a Super Bowl MVP in 2018. Why do I mention all of this? One, he's not getting enough credit. Despite all the credit he's getting, he's still not getting enough. Number two, when you have a guy go through something like that, and then that guy starts to drop some knowledge at a presser, I suggest you stop and you listen to what he has to say.
I think the big thing is don't be afraid to fail. I think, you know, in our society today, you know, Instagram, Twitter, it's a highlight reel. You know, it's all the good things. And then when you look at it, you know, you think like, wow, when you have a rough day, your life's not as good as that. Like, you know, you're failing. And I don't think, you know, failure is part of life. That's a part of building character and growing. Like, without failure, who would you be? I wouldn't be up here if I hadn't fallen thousands of times, made mistakes. You know, we all are human. We all have weaknesses. And I think throughout this, just being able to share that and be transparent. I know when I listen to people speak and they share their weaknesses, I'm listening because I can resonate. So I'm not perfect. I'm not Superman. Might be in the NFL and we might have just won the Super Bowl, but hey, we still have daily struggles. I still have daily struggles. So, but that's where my faith comes in. That's where my family comes in. And, you know, I think when you look at a struggle in your life, just know that, you know, that's just an opportunity for your character to grow. And that's really just been the message. Simple. Like, if something's going on in your life and you're struggling, embrace it because you're growing.
Embrace the suck. If you're looking for me to sling some hot take right here, it's not coming. That's not what this is about. I mean, this guy's dropping knowledge. Whenever somebody normally starts on a press conference and starts talking about Instagram or Twitter, it's normally a cue to take a nap. It's usually some old-timer complaining about social media, the 24-hour news cycle. Except when Nick Foles does it, he's talking about the fact that it gives a false impression about life, that it just gives everybody highlights. Now, that's some real talk. That's real talk from a guy who has failed, who's not afraid to say, yeah, I've failed lots of times. And when was the last time you went to a Super Bowl MVP press conference and got a motivational speech? When was the last time you went to any press conference or heard any press conference and thought, damn, I literally took something away from that. I got something out of that. Normally, it's a collection of platitudes, cliches, dozens of it is what it is. This was not that. This was a Super Bowl MVP, a guy who reached the pinnacle of the game, and he's trying to use his worst days, not his best day, but his worst days to inspire others. I got to tell you, I saw that. It kind of pumped me up. I saw that. It made me want to be better. So why don't we just slow the roll and the talk about Nick Foles and his future and just enjoy the present? And if you feel like you're failing, this guy's message clearly is just keep showing up. Keep showing up. Keep chipping away. Keep chopping. Good things will happen. Ask Nick Foles. Keep chopping, y'all. Keep chopping. And mad respect to this guy. Mad respect to Nick Foles for getting the opportunity, struggling initially, and then making the most of it. I mean, sure, the coaching staff put him in a good spot. The coaching staff schemed up, coached him up, but he still had to execute. And he did so on the biggest stage ever. Mad respect to Nick Foles. I know for a fact this guy responded when I said, somebody pick me up. Let's go to Buffalo. Rick in Buffalo. My man, I appreciate the phone call very much. You know it. Rick, what's up?
First off, Jim, it wasn't me who broke into Gronk headquarters, but I'm definitely glad someone did. Nobody I hate more than that illiterate, cheap shot and lump of crap. But let me give the Patriots some of the credit they do deserve. Brady's the greatest quarterback ever. Belichick's the greatest coach ever. And out of the five titles they've won, a couple were actually legitimate. But to see the dynasty possibly end on a Brady fumble and the hoodie getting taken to school, outside of the Bills winning the Super Bowl, it doesn't get much better than that. And to hear Patriot fans complaining about the refs is so friggin' good. A lot harder to win when you don't get all the calls, isn't it, you scumbag? And my favorite part of it all, Jim, is the Eagles win on Sunday finally shut the big fat mouth of Patriot radio analyst and lead cheerleader Scott Zolak. New England's a first-class organization, and I'll never understand why they employ that blowhard scab. But don't get the loss get you two down, Zoe. You'll always have your brilliant NFL career to proudly look back on. Nobody wore the ball cap and carried the clipboard quite like you, tough guy. And lastly, Jim, Bills fans are really happy about Frank Reich finally getting a ring. During his time in Buffalo, he was nothing but class and such a down-to-earth and humble guy. You know, the polar opposite of Tom Brady. Wore Nick Foles somehow making his way to Buffalo. Unwore arrogant and hypocritical New Englanders. Now you can get back to pretending you like the Red Sox, you front runners. Thanks for the vine, Jim. I'm out.
Rick in Buffalo. Rakim, make sure, hey, Rick, make sure you know you're in the smack off this coming year. That's a fact. Rick in Buffalo. Let's get a telephone call in here. Lafayette, Louisiana. Angel. Good to have you on, Angel. What's up? How are you?
Hey, Jim. I'm well, thanks. Hey, listen. My husband and I decided to go to Disney World with our three kids under five, which was, you know, that was a real good time.
Right?
They didn't have any crowds, and we didn't have any temper tantrums at all. But we got the TSA pre-check, and so you should get that.
Angel, you were so funny. So the kids didn't have any temper tantrums, and there were no crowds at Disneyland. What an amazing thing.
It was amazing.
So, yeah, so I guess that's not what happened. And you want to make sure that I got the TSA pre-check because I do not have that yet. You're right. So how'd that go for you?
Yeah, it was awesome, man. We went in and out lickety-split and took turns holding the three-month-old. And, you know, we were in and out.
Angel, you are the best. You know, you're right. I do need a TSA pre-check. All right, you got it. Let me take that under advisement and consideration because it got them in and out lickety-split. What a funny gal. We're joined right now by Chris Mullen. Chris, it's great to have you back on. How are you?
My pleasure, Jim. Nice to hear you. My pleasure to be on. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Chris. Great to hear you, too. Now, you've been a part of some obviously great, great moments in Madison Square Garden, but where does beating number four Duke on Saturday rank for you, Chris?
Oh, definitely right up there, Jim. And we've been struggling so much lately, and a lot of games like that, it's just nice to pull one out. And obviously with, you know, Duke being such a major power and their brand and, you know, nice sold-out guards, it was a really, really nice win for our kids.
You know, it's a great win for your program. And I want to get into that in a minute, Chris. You mentioned that it's been kind of a tough run lately. You lost 11 straight, obviously not ideal. But the fact is, the previous game had been a five-point loss to number six Xavier. The stretch also included a pair of close losses to Georgetown, a close one against Creighton, another close loss to Xavier, and a seven-point loss to number one Villanova. Knowing all that, how good did it feel to break through on Saturday and win the way you did?
So important. As you said, Jim, all those games are very, very similar. Two possession games within the last 2 minutes. And different circumstances each and every night. But the fact that they came right on top of each other was really, really tough to digest. But what we really did, we just took it, you know, the old cliche is take it one game at a time. That's exactly what we did. We looked at the film, tried to make corrections. And in sports, and especially in basketball, you know, we made a few shots in the Duke game that we missed the previous game. So sometimes it's as easy as that, make or miss. We capitalized on some free throws, made a few big threes, and got out of the hump, get over the hump. You know, as you said, we're heading down to Philly now to play number one Villanova. So it only gets tougher.
We're talking to Chris Mullen, and we'll cover that in a minute. You know, Chris, you know, that's exactly how that goes. Sometimes the shots go down, sometimes they don't. Sometimes you get a good bounce, sometimes you don't. The thing is, though, you're dealing with young players, and a stretch of close losses can be pretty tough emotionally, and they create a situation where young players think they're never going to break through, except that's not what happened here. How'd you keep all these guys on board and believing that the hard work would pay off?
Yeah, I really think the big thing, Jim, is really keeping things in perspective, being really transparent. You know, when we watch the film, after wins and losses, we pretty much approach it the same way. You know, we do some good things during the game, and we always address that and congratulate them. And when we make mistakes, we try and change the next day in practice. So that approach is, you know, when you're losing, it's tough. But I think it is really important, especially with young kids, to be consistent with that approach. You know, we had games where we won and didn't play well, and I addressed that as well. So it gets a little tougher when they add up all in a row. I think the consistent approach pays off, and hopefully we can, you know, have a nice month here in February.
St. John's head coach Chris Mullen joining us. Shamori Ponds had a huge game, 33-7, 4 steals, 3 assists. He was named the Naismith Player of the Week after yesterday. What did you make of the effort and the performance you got from him on Saturday?
Yeah, Shamori's been great all year. You know, his shot selection's been better, but, you know, with one of our guards, Mark Clavette, not playing, a lot more is put on his shoulders, not only scoring, but also playmaking. Shamar is a very composed young man, very, very talented. He's got a great, great future ahead of him. And I think he's really picked up his play as of late, just really getting into the paint, you know, and making good decisions when to finish and when to kick out to his teammates.
You know, it seems like when you talk about him picking it up, Chris. It seems like the bigger the stage, the better he plays. I mean, we're talking about a really young player here, 33 against Duke, after 31 against Xavier, 33 against Georgetown, 37 against Villanova. We know he can score the ball. I'm really taken by this guy's mentality, though, and his personality. There was a piece in the Players Tribune that he wrote, and he said that when you were recruiting him in high school, the first time you guys met, you said to him, "I thought you'd be shorter," and he nearly said to you, "I thought you'd be taller." He didn't say that, but he said right then he recognized that both of you had some Brooklyn in you. What's it mean to have Brooklyn in you, and how do you guys connect on that level?
Yeah, well, Shamari Ponds, when you look at him, Jim, you know, if you just kind of watch his first game, you'd probably say that's a New York City guard. He's got great instincts. He plays on field. Very, very composed. You know, you wouldn't really know for, you know, winning or losing by the expression on his face. He approaches every game the same way. Kind of a quiet kid, but confident. Got a quiet confidence about him. It's funny you say that. Mitch Kupchak happened to stop by practice yesterday, and I introduced Shamari to Mitch, and they were chatting. And I said, "Mitch, you know, he's from Long Island." And Shamari, "So I'm Shamari Ponds. I'm from Brooklyn." So he's very proud of his upbringing. Comes from a great family, and he's having a great career so far.
That's a great story. I love that. I love that he said that. You know, he also wrote that in your relationship with him, quote, "there's love and there's trust, but he sure as hell ain't afraid to challenge me either. If you think about it, what's more Brooklyn than that?" Quote, unquote. He said that. So, Chris, when you're evaluating players, how important is it that they not only have ability, obviously, but they're willing to be challenged and they're willing to be coached and even coached hard?
Yeah, I think, Jim, you know, these kids today are exposed to a lot more than we were growing up with the social media and all these different things. But really, at the core of it, I think they want to be taught. Obviously, they want to win, but you always have to go through stages to get there. Winning is not easy, and it's not just given to you. And Shamari, as gifted as he is, he's very open, not so much to criticism, but to just getting better each and every day. I think sometimes in this day and age, everyone wants everything so quickly. It's important that there's steps to be taken, you know, to earn things. And sometimes it gets lost with this age of pressing a button and getting your information instantly. I think in sports, it's a good barometer to keep you grounded and understand what it takes to be successful.
St. John's head coach Chris Mullin joins us. A couple more moments. So, of course, the reward for beating number 4 Duke is you get to go to number 1 Villanova tomorrow night. It's part of a 3-game stretch where you played the number 6 team, the number 4 team, and now the top-ranked team. How did you go about preparing your guys for a run like that?
Again, Jim, the oldest thing is game by game. And, you know, we prepped each game pretty much the same way. Obviously, the game plan fluctuates a little bit, but our preparation doesn't. So there's always the balance of making sure we understand what we got to do offensively, defensively. That's probably the most important thing, is having your own team ready. And then doing enough scout and prep and not overdo it, where they can go out there and play free and easy and confident. For the most part, been pretty good. We just had a hard time finishing games. So if we can stay in the game tomorrow like we have been, and then make some some clutch shots and do the plays that need to be made at the end of the game, and we feel good about our chances.
Listen, one last thought, and you did. You gave them all they could handle a couple of weeks back. What was your biggest takeaway from that game that you're looking to apply to this game?
Well, Villanova's a throwback team, Jim. You know, they're one of those teams that they don't overwhelm you with athleticism and highlight plays, but they're so well coached by Jay Wright. They're unselfish. They're very the most efficient offensive team in the country. And then defensively, they're solid. Nothing, like I said, nothing fancy. Just fundamental play, unselfish. So to me, it's really, really a throwback type team. And they've been great the last 4 years.
There you go. Two down. And no, I did not forget about Podcast Tuesday. This week, it is Podcast Wednesday. My guest is former NFL running back Thomas Jones, who joins me in studio for the podcast to talk about his second career. Check back tomorrow. See you then. I'm out.